Masechet Beitza, Daf Bet, Amud Aleph, page 2a. Right, we started yesterday looking at the new Masechet, the first Mishnah. So let's just review what the Mishnah taught us and where we're currently holding in the Gemara. Mishnah taught us three cases. Each of the three cases we have a Machloket, Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. Reading different cases, and what is the connection between all three cases? Only the fact that here we see that Beit Shammai are lenient and Beit Hillel are strict, the opposite of what we normally find in Shas. The Mishnah brings us three cases where this occurs, and otherwise these cases aren't connected to each other. Except for Yom Tov, the second case is a case of chametz.
Right.
Shalom, Rabbi Yosef. Good to see you. Welcome back. Welcome home. Excellent. We're learning Beitza. Rabbi Yosef. We're learning Beitza. My second Beitza. There you go. The Gemara for you. So, our Mishnah brings us three cases. What are the three cases? Case number one, the case of an egg laid on Yom Tov. What are the two sides of the argument? Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel?
Yeah.
So who says what?
Beit Shammai says you can eat it, Beit Hillel says you cannot.
Yeah, fair. Beit Shammai says you can eat it, he's lenient, you can eat it. Beit Hillel says you can't. Case number two, case of chametz on Pesach. Right, they both agree in the case of Seor leaven. Where do they disagree? In the case of chametz. What's the argument on chametz? Beit Shammai say the size of a date, a larger size, before you become liable, it has to be the size of a date. Beit Hillel says, no, you're liable even on the size of a kazayit. So we see again, Beit Hillel is more strict.
Beit Shammai says the kazayit, which is larger than the date.
Yeah. Beit Shammai says...
I thought date was larger than the kazayit.
No, Beit Shammai say the date.
Beit Shammai says the date. The Lord, the kazayit.
No, and Chametz. Right, so we're arguing about the chametz, the ksor we're agreeing on, and the bit they're arguing about is the chametz bit. So how much chametz do you need to find, not to eat, right? To eat, of course, any amount, kol shehu, is forbidden. But how much do you need to find in your house to go against the prohibition of you shall not see it and you shall not find it, right? Which is separate than eating it. In order to break the prohibition of seeing it or finding it in your house, it has to be a certain amount. You find one Cheerio, you don't break the rule. If you find, however, a kazayit or a date's worth, depending on the argument, then you are liable. That's the threshold that you need to hit before you break that Torah commandment. So that's what the machloket is. And we see again in this case number two. But Beit Shammai is the more lenient of the two. He allows you a bigger amount. He allows you a date. Beit Hillel is more strict, says, no, even a kazayit is enough for you to be liable for that. Right, so we see second case where Beit Hillel is more strict than Beit Shammai. Case number three, a case of shechting an animal on Yom Tov. What do you do with the blood? So we know that the Torah teaches us you need to cover the blood. What's the machloket in the case number three? Beit Shammai say
whether you prepared the
you can dig and cover it. You can dig up earth, and earth is otherwise muksa, and use it to cover the blood. Right? They're lenient. Beit Hillel says you're not allowed to do that. La'atchila, b'di'eved they allow it, but la'atchila you're not allowed to do that according to Beit Hillel. So there are three cases. Okay, so the Gemara is now going to deal with case one, right? It's the main case that we're trying to look at in this Masechet, because it's a law of Muksa, a law of Yom Tov, what you're allowed to do on Yom Tov, what you're not allowed to do on Yom Tov. Is this egg Muksa, basically? We're going to see now in the Gemara is going to bring four different ways of understanding what is actually going on in the Mishnah. We're going to get to the other ones later, you probably haven't got to them yet in your learning, but the first one is going to deal with a classic case of Muksa, and we're going to argue back and forth between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel about this case, how we hold in the case of Muksa. We're going to see later on three different other reasons which are based on Muksa. They're going to reject this case of Muksa. They actually, they're not arguing about Muksa at all, but actually they're arguing about something else. I'm going to get altogether four different possibilities about what our mission is talking about. But certainly in the first case, and the other three cases are brought in a lot shorter form, the first case is the one that we argue back and forth for a whole amud on it, is the case of Muksa. That this is a case of Muksa that we're dealing with, and we've got an argument between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai as how they hold in Muksa. One is more lenient in Muksa, and one is more strict in Muksa. And that's what this case is arguing about. This is on Yom Tov. This case happens to be on Yom Tov, but the argument would also apply to the Lord of Shabbos on Muksa. Okay, so, any questions at this point? So far, so good.
Can you just elaborate on the third part of the Mishnah, the third one, that Shammai says you can't cover it with Beis Hillel as far as you can't cover it, but if you you can cover it, is that how
what he means is, B'di'evid, if you did slaughter your chicken or whatever it was, now you're in a dilemma. What do you do? So you do cover it. So if you already did go ahead and slaughter it, you can go and cover it. But if you didn't kill it yet, and you went to the Rav, and you said to your Rav who holds by Beit Hillel, can I chef this? And the Rav says, well, have you got any earth ready to cover it? I didn't prepare any. If you didn't prepare any, then you're not allowed to let Chila slaughter it. But you did it, fine, so go and find some earth now. Why? Because it's a Torah law that we need to comply with to cover up the blood. Right, so that will override the rule of Muksa that says that you can't.
But there's another option.
Then the Mishnah finally comes up with the final line of the Mishnah. The Gemara is going to explain whether or not it's connected or what it means. The final line of the Mishnah says, if you've got ashes, they're considered, they're already prepared. So ashes you don't need to worry about. We're going to see in the Gemara there's a question. One of the main arguments that we're going to see is whether or not something was prepared. If you didn't designate it before Shabbos, can you designate it on Shabbos? Can you decide now to use it if you didn't decide beforehand? So in this last case of the Mishnah, the last line of the Mishnah, ashes are considered always to be prepared. Even if you didn't mentally designate ashes, you could still use ashes because ashes have this law that they're always ready to be used for something. So you will get there in the Gemara, but that's just in terms of the basic understanding.
Is the case of the ashes as a proof that you're prepared or not preparing, or are the doctor said you can use the actual ashes?
This seems to be a separate case. The first case, the standard case that the case number three is talking about is whether you can use earth to cover it. Separately, you should also know that you could use ashes even if you didn't prepare them.
Okay. Not only because we learned yesterday in the Mishpura class about cooking on Shabbos and ashes and taking the ashes out and having Sinor, so it has to be against
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that fits in.
You can use the ashes, or the fact is that the ashes are raked out, they become nullified if they're raked out.
Okay. So don't know. Okay. Hopefully, when we get to that section in the Gemara, we'll see. We'll see. I haven't looked at that yet. Okay. Top. So the Gemara begins by asking about this first case, the case of the chicken that laid an egg on Yom Tov. What is the case? And the Gemara presents us with two options for looking at the case. There's two possible cases we could be talking about. The first case is a chicken that is set aside for eating. And the second case is a chicken that's not set aside for eating. They're the two options. Something that's set aside for eating means that I'm going to eat this chicken at some point. Maybe on Yom Tov, maybe not. But at some point I'm going to eat it. As opposed to case number two, which is a chicken I'm not intending to eat, because it's been set aside, so to speak. I've designated it, nothing specifically, but it's for egg laying. This is an egg laying chicken, and this is a roast chicken soup chicken. And there's a difference. What's the difference? The Gemara says like this. Depends which one we say that we're talking about. Has a ramification. Why? Because if we say, the Gemara starts off, that we're talking about a chicken that is set aside for eating, then what's the problem? Beis Hillel, who forbid it, right? Remember in this case, Beis Hillel forbids it.
Sound effects.
Don't worry. He's set aside for laying eggs, so you're fine. You're not in the chicken soup. You better keep on laying eggs and you'll be fine, right? I don't know if you can pick this up on the podcast. You stick it out the window.
I get it on my recording.
Yeah, you get the podcast. here's what we prepared earlier. Right? So, if we say that we're talking about a chicken that's set aside for eating, then that's a problem for Beis Hillel. How can Beis Hillel say it would be forbidden? Why? Because the Gemara says, if it's a case of a chicken that's you're expecting to eat it, and it lays an egg, then you should be able to eat the egg. Why? Because it's just food that's separated from food. Meaning what? Meaning that the chicken you're going to eat, the egg was part of the chicken, and it came out, like eggs do. And that's the same as taking a loaf of bread and slicing off a slice. Just because you take a bit of food from food, still food. You designated the egg, the chicken for eating, meaning you designated the whole thing for eating. Just because a bit of it fell out, a wing, an arm, a leg, an egg, came out, there's no difference. That's the argument. So if we said that the chicken we're talking about in our case of the Mishnah is one we were going to eat anyway, it shouldn't be a problem to eat the egg.
For anyone.
It's a question. Well, Rav Shammai agrees, says you're allowed to eat it. Why should Beis Hillel say no, right, if it's just food?
Right.
So therefore, the Gemara has to say it can't be that case. That's obvious, meaning it's an obvious answer that no one would argue with it. If we said it was a chicken that we were going to eat, Beis Hillel wouldn't have grounds here to complain. So it must be, it can't be that case. It must be the other type of chicken. A chicken which only lays eggs. And in that case, Beit Hillel has a good reason. It's not food. Therefore, the egg, we have good reason not to permit it. Beit Hillel has a good ground to say forbidden. It wasn't going to be eaten. We know that something that's not intending to be eaten is muksa. In general terms.
It's not the chicken that's been designated for the Yom Tov. It's the other random egg-laying chicken.
So, in order to explain this better, I'm going to give you a sneak preview. A bit later on in the Gemara is going to say, why not just talk about the chicken? The chicken's also muksa. If you say that this is a chicken that is not designated for eating, then the chicken's muksa. Why start talking about the egg? Right? Start with the chicken itself. You don't need to go all the way to the egg. Just say you have a case of a chicken and go from there. So the Gemara answers that and says why we talked about the egg and not the chicken. But the point is still important to show that anything that's not designated for eating is muksa. Prima facie, on the face of it, is muksa. So even the egg is also muksa. Even more so the egg, the Gemara is going to say even more so. We learn even more so from the egg.
And later on we'll discuss when the egg was laid.
Yeah, top year, but I want to get too complicated. Right, so anything that's not designated, so Beis Hillel, in the second case, a case where it's a chicken that lays eggs, Beis Hillel has good grounds to say it's forbidden. It's muksa, it's not being designated for food. That now throws back the question onto Beis Shammai. Okay, so what's Beis Shammai doing allowing it? This is muksa.
Just a little side point here. If this is an egg-laying chicken,
yeah,
the chicken is muksa. But what if you designate the eggs that come from this chicken to be your food that you're going to eat on Yom Tov?
Okay, so Lina, I think the answer is that you can't designate something that doesn't yet exist.
That's the idea of Noah.
Which is not something that
doesn't exist.
No, he's saying that in theory, any eggs that this chicken makes, I hereby designate that I'm going to eat them, right? Yeah, so I think the answer is that you can't do that with something that hasn't yet come into existence. It has no.
Is it according to the shita that says that it's ochel and ochel?
Yeah.
And you have to say whether it's laid or not. It's part of it. The only question that he has. His question stands where you say it's ochel and ochel, and it said it's food from food.
Yeah.
What's the difference between slicing off, a wing or taking out the egg? You can say, I already said earlier that one happens on its own, and you do. But at the same time, it's like, other than the fact that a loaf of bread is not an animal, it's like taking a slice of bread from a whole loaf.
But then you're saying that your mashal would be that if I can I take a loaf and say this loaf is not designated for food, but if I take a slice off, it would be. Meaning I have to do the whole thing or nothing.
I don't know. Lost me by that one.
Okay. Tov.
But also we have the same problem with timing. When Yom Tov is and whether it is after Shabbos. We'll get that later.
Thanks. Okay, so where are we holding? So let's refresh. Two possible cases that we could be talking about. What type of chicken? There's two possible types of chicken. According to one type of chicken, it would be a problem for Beis Hillel. According to the first type of chicken, that we're going to eat it, we wouldn't have a reason to forbid it. So the Gemara says it can't be that type of chicken. Beis Hillel would have no grounds for coming up with his opinion. Therefore, it must be chicken type number two, egg-laying chicken. That's the only one that would fit in. And then that would allow Beit Hillel. But then we have a problem which we need to explain now as to how we can fit in Beit Shammai. How can Beit Shammai permit a muksa chicken, so to speak? Right? A chicken that just lays eggs. How can you eat something that comes from a chicken that just lays eggs? So that's what the Gemara answers. How does it answer? So this is the Gemara we looked at yesterday. Answers by saying that it's not a problem for Beis Shammai. Why? Because we see that there are two opinions in Muksa, and we can say that Beis Shammai follows a more lenient opinion in Muksa, and Beit Hillel follows a more strict opinion in Muksa. What are those two opinions? So those two opinions are characterized under the names, under the rabbis, Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. Right there, that's where the argument is found through the rest of Shas about the extent of Muksa. And because we see there's an argument on the extent of Muksa, we can say that this argument of Beit Hillel and Beis Shammai follows the same argument. And that allows us to say that in this case, Beis Shammai permit the chicken, the egg. And Beis Hillel don't. Beis Hillel take the more strict view. Beis Shammai take the more lenient view. So that's where we got up to in the Gemara. So we're now up to Rav Nachman. Okay, we're up to middle of the page. Bet Amud Aleph. Amar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says, Le'olam b'tarna golet ha'omedet l'gadel beitim. Rav Nachman is now going to explain what we've just said outside. He explains like this. Lo'olam, actually, b'tarna golet ha'omedet l'gadel beitim. We're talking about a chicken that is designated to produce eggs. Right, so that's our case number two. Udeitle muksa, itle nolad. Udeitle muksa, leitle nolad. So the one who holds by muksa, I'll explain in a minute, he holds by nolad. And the one who doesn't hold by muksa doesn't hold by nolad. That's the short form, the itle and the leitle, the one who holds by muksa, the one who doesn't hold by muksa, is a short form way of referring to Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. In fact, they both hold by muksa. So it's not exact when it says one holds muksa and one doesn't hold muksa. Talking about the extent. Meaning, in some cases, Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold muksa. Because he's more lenient, and he doesn't hold this muksa. So he's a late muksa. Itle muksa, that there is muksa, is Rabbi Yehuda. Right? He's the more strict opinion that says there is muksa. So here, Rav Nachman is just telling us explicitly in the Gemara here what we've already explained. Meaning that what we're doing here was splitting the machloket between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel into the one who says there's muksa and one who says there isn't muksa. And as Rav Nachman goes on to explain now, Beit Shammai k'Rabbi Shimon, Beit Hillel k'Rabbi Yehuda. Beit Shammai followed the lenient opinion of Rabbi Shimon. And Beit Hillel follow Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, so far all we've done now in the Gemara is explain, in the words of the Gemara, exactly what we just said before in order to get to this point. Okay, so there's nothing new so far up until now. Okay?
Now, when we talk about just linking muksa and nolad, is there a subcategory there? Is it two separate categories?
So muksa, at least in the Art Scrolls definition, has seven different categories, one of which is nolad. So here, the argument between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, or Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, the same argument, is whether or not nolad would be considered to be a case of muksa, according to this understanding of the machloket. And we would hold that Beit Shammai would say no. There's no lad in muksa. And Beis Hillel will say, yes, there is.
That's why it's not permitted.
There may be another way of looking.
There's lots of ways. The Gemara is going to have four different ways altogether.
Let's think about how they did things 2,000 years ago.
Okay.
Which is approximately the time of this.
Right.
Okay. They were not as wasteful, shall we say, as they are today. Okay? Chickens who can no longer lay eggs, or the eggs start being not the best thing for they get slaughtered and eaten.
Yeah.
So what Beit Shammai might be looking at to give a backing for leniency is the chicken, even though it's an egg layer, is also a chicken being there. So the two dual purpose chickens. So you can't say that that you can make the egg muksa because it was just a layer.
I hear what you're saying. Beit Shammai could argue that although it's not designated for eating, it could be eaten. That's always a possibility, and because it's always a possibility, we allow that to be included in the possible designation, even though it's not its general name on the top of the chicken coop on its label,
Malega. Right. That's the way you want it. In fact, only till in many places it's still done like that. Right. People have their private things, they still do it.
Right. And in that case, then we would say the machloket between is Beit Hillel holds something is designated according to its primary designation.
Right.
And Beit Shammai go, you can have a subsidiary designation. It could also be eaten. Okay, maybe. Could be. Okay, very good. So, Rav Nachman. Just then, what we just learned now is Rav Nachman explained, we're talking about the chicken that lays eggs. And we're saying that our dispute, Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai, follows Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. But the Gemara is going to challenge now Rav Nachman. Umi Amar Rav Nachman Hachi. Did Rav Nachman really say that? Why? Because we heard Rav Nachman say something different. Perhatsanan. Because we learned in the Mishnah. Beit Shammai Omrim Magbihin Me'al HaShulchan Atzamot V'Klipin. You can remove, you can pick up, if you like, from the table bones and shells. Beit Hillel Omrim Masalek Et HaTavla Kula V'Na'ala. Beit Hillel say differently. They say you have to pick up the entire table and then shake it off. Pick up the tabla, the board. The board means the top piece, right? A table with two pieces. What are we talking about? Let's just understand this new Mishnah. This new Mishnah is a case of what? Talking about a case on Shabbos. It doesn't have to be Yom Tov. It's talking about a case of Muksa. You're eating on your table your Shabbos lunch, and there are leftover bits. What are the leftover bits? Bones and shells from the nuts. Pistachio nuts, very nice. Sunflower seeds, whatever they are. You've got the shells left over. Now those shells and those bones are now no good for anything. Therefore, classically speaking, they're now muksa. If you were to find a bone stem on the floor or shells by themselves, you're not allowed to pick them up and play with them or touch them. They're muksa. They have no purpose on Shabbat. They're not for use. They should be muksa. We see over here in this case that we have a Beit Shammai Beit Hillel argument. Another one similar to this. What do we see in this case? So we see in this case also Beit Shammai is lenient and Beit Hillel is strict. What do we do with these shells and bones that are left on the table? According to Beit Shammai, you don't have to worry. You can pick them up and take them off the table. According to Beit Hillel, you can't pick them up. You have to pick up the table and shake them off. Why? Why does Beit Shammai allow you to pick them up? Because he says they can be used for animal food. Mm-hmm. You can feed bones to dogs. I guess you can feed the nuts, the shells to something as well. I'm not quite sure.
People birds.
Birds. They eat shell nuts. Dog. Okay, you can feed them to animals. So therefore, he says it's not muksa. What about Beit Hillel? Why does Beit Hillel say, I still hold that that's muksa? We agree on the facts, right? There's no argument on the fact. I also agree that you can feed that stuff to animals. So why does Beit Hillel say it's still muksa, even though he agrees? I agree with you, Rabbi Shammai, you can feed it to animals. But I still hold it's muksa, and you have to shake off the table. You can't pick them up. Why?
Because the table is a kli. Also, we have to remember that the tables were much smaller than the size of a TV tray.
All right, I hear, but the so question is, why does Beit Hillel say you can't pick them up with your hands? Yeah, but why does he hold the mixer? He agrees that you could feed them to animals. We're not arguing that you can agree that you can feed them to animals. Beit Shammai says you can feed these to animals, pick them up. Beit Hillel says you can feed these to animals, don't pick them up. So the difference here is the Beit Shammai allow you to pick them up and feed them to the animals, and Beit Hillel don't, is because Beit Hillel say they became animal food on Yom Tov, on Shabbos, and you didn't designate them as animal food before. Whereas Beit Shammai, which maybe goes against your Shita, say it doesn't matter that you didn't designate them beforehand. It doesn't matter that they became animal food on Shabbos. I still allow you to use them.
It's simply why. It's very simple why. The person who has animals and he gives his leftovers to his animals, and he knows from the chatchila, when I finish, what's left over goes to the animals. I don't have to every day say it's going to be for the animals. It's his habit. It's derech ha'maaseh.
And Beit Hillel doesn't hold that?
Apparently not. Apparently Beit Hillel says, well, you didn't think about this particular meal, Vema.
Okay. Nothing was left. Yeah, but it doesn't matter.
Today we throw everything away, but in that time they always have it used for something.
Right, but the question is, can you use it?
You're like a hatchet. You're like the egg chicken. Compared with a man who eats his food and gives his maharishi to his animals. Like he has this chicken that he needs it for the eggs, not for the chicken.
You still feed the animals who don't lay eggs.
Our chickens, they get a lot of our leftovers.
Yeah. Yeah, but the question is, can you? According to Beit Hillel, you can't feed them the leftovers on Shabbos, because they became leftovers on Shabbos. According to Beit Hillel, Shammai, you can. This is like the machloket we mentioned originally. The machloket we mentioned with Rav Shimon and Rav Yehuda, when it's originally found in Gemara Shabbos, was over the oil in the ner. What do we say the argument was there? Oil in a candle, that the candle went out. Can you use the oil? So according to Beit Shammai, you can, because now you don't need it for the ner anymore. But Beit Hillel say, no, you can't use it, because... Sorry, Beit Hillel, Rav Yehuda, who's more strict, says over there you can't use it because it was going to be used. You can't change the designation midway through the course of the day. Just like the oil in the candle couldn't become unmuktzah, it was muktzah at the beginning of Shabbos. It was being used for the candle. Rabbi Shimon says if the candle went out, so you can now use the oil. It's now not muktzah anymore. So there we see, and we see again here, whether the argument is whether or not you can change the designation of something during the day. Rabbi Shimon says you can. If something becomes useful during the day, I can now use it for food for animals. Then I can now
take the chicken from
use
the
it. Egg. It's now not muksa.
And you can take the chicken from the egg.
And I can take the chicken from
the egg.
Egg from the chicken. Yafeh. Why? Because now... It's happened in the middle of the day, and it's now food. This food appeared from nowhere in the middle of the day. It's a chicken, it's an egg. Whereas Beit Hillel says you can't change in the middle of the day. You have to go by what it was. It was muksa. It was part of this chicken that we weren't going to touch. Just because it's now been separated, you can't change mid-course your law of muksa. If it was muksa at the beginning of twilight on Shabbos, and Shkia on Shabbos, it stays at what it is. Yofi. Okay. So in our case now we've got a case. What do we say? Let's just refresh. Rabbi Nachman explained our Mishnah like we wanted to explain it. That it's machloket originally between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda about being strict and lenient on this same point. And I'll show you... And that's what it was. The Gemara said, it can't, Rav Nachman, how can Rav Nachman say, explain in that way? I know a Mishnah where Rav Nachman goes differently. Doesn't hold like that. What's the Mishnah? So the Mishnah that he brings is this case of the table and the bones. And on that we see Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel follow exactly this. Not an argument so far, but we haven't got to the end of the Mishnah. The Mishnah then continues and says, Va'amar Rav Nachman, and here's where Rav Nachman differs, right? So far, so good, all fits in with our plan. It's the same framework. But Rav Nachman, in this Mishnah, is now going to argue on what we just learned about the table. Amar Rav Nachman, Ella, but wait a minute. Beit Shammai, sorry, I missed a few words. Amar Rav Nachman, Anu, we... Ein lanu ella, we don't have other than, meaning we only have something different. We have Beit Shammai k'Rabbi Yehuda, or Beit Hillel k'Rabbi Shimon. We've got the other way around, says Rav Nachman. According to this, Rav Nachman says, Beit Shammai is like Rav Yehuda. And Beis Hillel is like Rabbi Shimon. Right, according to this second Mishnah that we've now got about the table, at the end of that second Mishnah, Rav Nachman argues on the Reisha, on the beginning of the Mishnah, argues on the positions of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, and says, wait a minute, I heard differently. I heard that actually Beit Shammai is like Rabbi Yehuda, and Beit Hillel is like Rabbi Shimon. What does that mean? It means Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda is a strict case. Rabbi Shimon is lenient. So he switches it around. He flipped it. He says, wait a minute, I've got a Masoret. I learned differently. Then that's brought in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, there's a case of a table, and this is how we hold. Argues Rav Nachman in the Mishnah and says, no, I don't agree with the ratio, that first opinion in the Mishnah. I've heard the opposite. And that's the kusha that the Gemara is bringing now. The Gemara is bringing that in order to say, but wait a minute, did Rav Nachman really say this? We heard Rav Nachman say he flips it. What do we do with that? How does the Gemara answer now? Amar lecha Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman can explain himself like this. Gabei Shabbat, d'stamlan tana k'Rabbi Shimon. Let's say it outside and then we'll see in the words. Rav Nachman's going to say, you're right. Over there, I hold like this. Right? Rav Nachman, number one, does really hold like this. And Rav Nachman, number two, does flip to the other way of looking at it. And Rav Nachman's going to explain himself and say, you know what, you're right. But why do I hold one way here and then flip it the other way in a different Mishnah? Answer, because this one's talking about Shabbos and this one's talking about Yom Tov. In the case of Shabbos, I hold differently by Muksa than I do in the case of Yom Tov. And that's why I appear to have positions that in one case I'm holding strict, in one case I'm holding lenient. So the Gemara now brings.
So he's saying that on the earlier first case of Rabbanan, which is dealing with Shabbos, that you cannot get derivative from the egg from the chicken, but yet on the second case you can take the table and shake the things off.
No, he's the first case is the case of Yom Tov.
Yom Tov, which
so he is lenient. It's an egg on Yom Tov, so we hold by
Yom Tov.
No, sorry, hold on, ignore what I just said. The other way around. In the case of Yom Tov, in both cases, we're going to follow Beis Hillel, because that's the halakha that we follow, right? Because we always follow Beis Hillel unless it's right? So we're forbidden. We're going to see that on Yom Tov, we're going to get there, and the Gemara is going to explain. We're going to see that on Yom Tov, we're more strict than we are on Shabbos. Why are we more strict on Yom Tov?
Yom Tov is the first case?
Yom Tov is the first case, an egg born on Yom Tov. Right? An egg is laid on Yom Tov. So we're going to see that on Yom Tov we're more strict. And Beis Hillel hold the strict position. But actually, over here on Shabbos, Beit Hillel are holding the lenient position. Beit Hillel flipped to a lenient position on Shabbos. And vice versa.
Which case?
So the Gemara is now going to bring the cases he's talking about. We're not talking about the two cases that we set up so far, which was the egg and the table. They only came in order, well, the egg was the one in our Mishnah, and then we brought the table in order to bring this contradiction between Rav Nachman.
Right.
But actually now the Gemara is going to show the case, two more cases of Shabbos versus Yom Tov, where you see that in Shabbos we're strict, in Shabbos we're lenient, and in Yom Tov was strict. So there is going to be two more cases now that Gemara is going to bring that are actually the cases that explain this further. But they still work over here, right? They have to work in all cases. But the cases that the Gemara is going to bring are going to be the example of how we see, how we see that Rav Nachman holds differently in Shabbos
himself. Why there's a conflict or a kasha? He's explaining
his ability to hold one way that Beit Hillel is strict and one way that he's lenient. Right? So he follows Rav Yehuda in one case and he follows Rabbi Shimon in the other. That's a good question. Let's have a look. You're right, but for a different reason. In that case, he was more strict because he doesn't hold back. Hold on. It's a good question, Rabbi Rude. No, you're right. In Shabbos, the reason why we said that the Beis Hillel is more strict. But Rav Nachman argued and said, no, it's wrong, it's the other way. So Rav Nachman argues on that case and says, that can't be correct. That's why he holds that he can't be correct. Yeah. Very good. Okay, Todd. So.
Did we cover Rashi yet?
Not yet, no. So it's 12 o'clock. So we're going to leave it there for today. Bezrat Hashem. Rav Mordi, Bezrat Hashem, we'll catch up tomorrow. Okay.
Is he coming tomorrow?
Yeah. Okay.